Hey listeners, welcome back to All the Miles Mattered. This is Neil Amato. For this episode, we're focusing on a much longer race than the 3-mile versions of fall cross-country seasons past. We're focusing on a spring race in a far different place. It's the Boston Marathon, 26.2 miles of elevation change and excitement after miles and miles of hard work qualifying. The 2024 edition of the race is Monday, so this is a special All the Miles Mattered episode, taking a look at all things Boston this weekend through the recall of 2 runners, one each from Largo and Lado. They've been to Boston, they've experienced the starting line in Hopkinton, the Wellesley Scream Tunnel, the Newton Hills, and that last turn, a left onto Boylston Street. First is John Brennan from Largo, who qualified to run Boston 30 years ago. He's followed by Matt Heiser from Lado, who has run the race 4 times. Heiser, if he can put in the summer miles he intends to do this year, will try to qualify for his 5th trip to Boston, nearly 25 years after he first qualified for the race he calls the granddaddy of marathons. Thanks to these runners for their time, and thanks to you, the listeners, for coming along for the run.
It's always fun to hear, oh, there's another one coming out. That's going to be awesome.
Here's John Brennan talking about an early job out of college. He's working in Orlando, doesn't really know anyone, and of course, he's still in good shape from his years as a runner for the Largo Packers, then Westchester State in Pennsylvania, than Troy State in Alabama.
I was an accounting clerk. I wasn't making much money at all, just barely getting by. But, you know, it was my first job out of college, and I didn't really know anybody, so I was just trying to do something to make friends, trying to make connections or whatever. Essentially, I saw the corporate race on the bulletin board. They have a pretty good corporate race in Orlando. They used to, anyway. I'm like, okay, I'll do this. Still in pretty good shape, so I can probably meet people and stuff. So essentially, I went to, you know, find out about it. And I guess the person that was in charge of it had left or died, or I don't know what happened. But so the secretary was handling it, and she didn't want to handle it. So she convinced me to set it up.
So what did that involve?
Well, it was a lot. It was actually quite a bit, because I had to get everything together and gather all the people together and get, you know, just there was a lot of, you know, get all their sizes, because we got like, it was pretty good. I mean, we got shirts and shorts and, you know, all the other stuff, paraphernalia and little gift certificates. So, and it was a nice little corporate bag of stuff. There's a couple of people. That's where I met my first wife. So that's how I met her. So as part of that, because she was running, and she, you know, she wanted to do it. The other guy who got me into wanting to run Boston was a guy, I believe his name was Robert Butler. So he was an actuary. He was like in probably about 50 or so, 52. And he had like smoked and drank his entire life. So he had decided to start running, you know, because his blood pressure was, he was gaining weight and blood pressure. And he had been running for about 2 years prior. So he was, you know, he ran the race. And then I remember talking to him, and he was saying that he wanted to run Boston Marathon. And he just started running 2 years prior. And I'm like, really? Wow, that's pretty amazing. So he said, oh, I'm going to run 3 hours. I said, really? You're going to run 3 hours? He says, that's my goal. Yeah. I said, you just started running like 2 years ago after you've been smoking and drinking all your life. And I mean, I thought it was kind of fascinating. And, you know, he kind of convinced me to like look into running it. He said, yeah, Boston's the marathon. If you're going to run a marathon, that's the one you talk about, right? Because you actually have to qualify for it, you know?
It's not immediate for Brennan, but he does get a Boston qualifying time, or BQ, with training help from his actuary friend. This is all done in between changing jobs and moving back to Pinellas County, where some of those long runs were on the newly opened Pinellas Trail. Brennan got his BQ at the first Disney Marathon in January 1994. At that time, Boston's qualification process was different, and he could immediately enter the April 1994 race. In the Disney race, it wasn't all magical for Brennan. He learned a tough lesson that day about chafing, but he did run the time he needed. So, just under 10 years after he graduated from Largo High, John Brennan is headed north. He recalls having put in the training to pull off a fast time.
I had trained to run 3 hours, and that was my goal. And I felt that I was ready because I'd done like 20-mile runs, and I'd hit the three, you know, I was able to keep that pace. So I felt pretty strong that I would be able to do that. I had a pretty good base. So when I got to Boston, and I was like, I thought, I need a six-pack of beer at the end just to, you know, keep me motivated. You know, the whole beer thing, I was like, okay, well, I want to be, you know, after I'm done with the race, I just want to drink beer and feel better, right? So that was like the thing the prize for me at the end of the race, my finish. So if I didn't finish, I wouldn't get the beer. It's kind of a weird mental thing. I don't know if you get it or not.
No, but I do. I can see that. It's
like, yeah. So that's how that beer thing comes into play. So I get to Boston, and you can't figure out what road is one from the next because they're all being worked on. And I think they're working on that tunnel at the same time.
Oh, the Big Dig.
Yeah, the Big Dig. So it was all a mess. And so we go to Boston. It's a cool setup. They had the convention center. There's all these running things, and they have all these different, you know, food events where you can go eat spaghetti with everybody and meet Bill Rogers and Frank Shorter and stuff. It was kind of cool. The day of the race, I recall, was windy and cold. So I was kind of, you know, it was kind of like in a hurry. We're leaving the room to get to the race. And I had gotten Band-Aids that time. I meant to put Band-Aids on myself so that I wouldn't, you know, have the same situation happen at, you know, Disney.
Right.
But I was in a hurry, and I didn't have a chance to put the Band-Aids on. So I just took them with me, and I put them in that little pocket thing to put them on later. So essentially, but for some reason I lost them. I was into the bathroom when I came back, and they fell out. And it was like, oh crap, man. So when I started the race, it was essentially, I was way in the back, and they had that pad, that time pad. So as soon, you know, right when you crossed it, your time would start. You know, a lot of these people, I can tell, or I don't know if they lied or somehow, but they shouldn't have been in the front. At the start of the race, it's just a mass of people, and I'm trying to get to my pace, you know, trying to get my, was it 6:45 pace going. And I'm just having to go run around people for miles and miles. And essentially also the race is undulating hills. It's like undulating downhill. It's kind of fast, actually.
It is. It can be dangerously fast for that long a race.
Well, I'm running it. I'm taking notice that the undulating hills are, my muscles weren't used to that. But I was doing pretty well. I was keeping my pace. I was actually ahead of my pace, feeling pretty good. Boston's pretty amazing because there's the spectators are out there. It's a day off for everybody.
Patriots Day, yeah.
So everybody's out there. It's like a picnic. I mean, there's people cooking up their food and stuff and drinking beer and drunk people, and they're yelling at you. And, you know, they have different people cooking food. You have like Indians cooking their spicy food and Germans cooking their stinky food. And I just remember the smell. Some of the stink of the food just made me want to puke, you know, and they're out there right in the side cooking the food up. And I'm like, man, I'm going to vomit. Some of this stuff stinks like hell. And I remember a lot of spectators. I mean, just, it's kind of cool because there's a lot of people cheering you on, you know?
Yeah.
So I was feeling pretty good. And then I was starting to feel a little, you know, I was starting to feel it. And there's an area along one of those women's schools. I forget the name.
Wellesley.
Wellesley. Yeah. There's on either side, there was like for a half mile, at least there was girls on either side screaming. It was like, wow, this is like incredible. And then right after that, I think then there's the Heartbreak Hill part, which is not just one hill. It's two hills, actually. I think that's around 16 miles. I think I crested the hill, got up, and after about 100 yards, I was running, and there was a there was a banana peel or some kind of goo. It was some kind of crap, and it was like slippery. I was running and I extended my leg and it slid forward and hyperextended my leg. And then it also, my back popped, you know, like I just feel there was a popping in my back. And then all of a sudden my right leg went totally numb. It was like a funny bone, but it's my entire leg. And I'm like, holy shit, what did I do? I didn't know what happened. I tried to keep going, but then all of a sudden my back started to like totally seize up on me, just back spasm. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to stop. I don't know what to do because I'm in so much pain. So I started to walk, and all of a sudden my legs and my body started to like just freeze up on me. Just totally, I was spasming, you know, like my whole body was spasming. It was weird. I can't stop and I can't not stop. So I'm like, am I going to quit or what am I going to do? And I'm like, I walked over to the side of the spectators and I'm like trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I don't want to quit, but I'm in so much pain. So I'm standing there and the guy just, hey man, you want a beer? And I go, yeah, give me freaking beer, man. I'll drink a beer. And I was standing there just moaning and groaning to these people. And they're just looking at me like, oh man, I'm sorry, you know, blah, you know, that sucks. And so I'm like just bullshitting with them. And I drink another beer and I'm like, okay, well, I'm feeling a little better now. I mean, I feel like I'm, at least my back's not spasming. So I just said, hell, I'm going to finish this damn thing. So I started running again, but it was just sheer pain. I mean, I had to run in a weird way. It wasn't even running. It was just like some kind of weird gallop kind of thing. But I managed to do something in a way that I could actually keep moving. But it was like, it looked like Quasimodo. I was like bent over to try to keep my back from spasming. But it was like running forward in a like a sideways like motion of running. So I just did that.
Wow.
You know, mile after mile. I don't know. I wasn't going very fast and people, you know, like running past me and stuff. And I'm like, all these things going in my mind going, you got to quit. You can't keep doing this. I'm just trying to distract my mind from quitting. So I just started focusing on the beer.
Brennan's reference to the beer has some backstory, some of which, let's just say, is better left unsaid, at least in this podcast. If you see Brennan, maybe buy him the beverage of his choice, and he'll tell you the full story. The beer was a planned reward at the end of the Disney marathon, and he also had a post-race celebration in mind with a six-pack of his favorite type of beer then, Moosehead, when he finished in Boston. Well, I will actually go back because you mentioned the guy, the spectator. What kind of beer was that? Do you recall?
It was just, did they still have Meisterbrau or something like that?
Oh yeah,
it was
did Meisterbrau. Yeah, sure.
It was either Meisterbrau or it was Pabst.
Okay. Yeah. Something along those lines.
You know, so he was nice enough to give me a couple of his beers, you know, out of the, you know, the cooler. So whatever it was, I was able to continue on. And it was kind of tough because I looked pretty bad. I mean,
yeah, it sounds like it.
I looked pathetic and people were laughing and stuff. And, you know, hey, man, you got an ambulance. I mean, you know, they're from Boston. I just, you know, let you have it, right? It pissed me off a little bit, but I had to keep moving. So eventually I finished the damn thing and that was that.
Again, I didn't tell the whole story. It does involve chafing again, which for runners makes them cringe at the mere mention of the word. Nonetheless, and despite the injury, Brennan is glad he completed the course in Boston, even though he never ran another marathon. For any Boston first-timers out there, Brennan says the enthusiasm of the starting line can be tough to overcome, and that moderation is needed early on.
Don't go overboard trying to pass people the first 3 or 4 miles. I would say don't waste your energy trying to get around these people. Let it disperse and conserve your energy and don't freak out. So yeah, definitely just chill the first 3 or 4 miles. Don't worry about trying to get around people. Don't use your energy to do that. You'll need it further down. And once you hit the heartbreak series, you're going to need every bit of energy to get up those things. Once you're shot, you're shot. You can't come back from it. You know, and also should enjoy Boston, really. I think you're better off not really getting too caught up in pace.
Now here's Matt Heiser, who graduated from Lato in 1985. His voice was featured in episode 10 of All the Miles Mattered, telling the story of a late night decision by Lato and Largo runners in that summer 1984 trip to the Orlando water park, Wet n Wild. Heiser was one of the runners rounded up by Orlando police after the group went pool hopping around midnight at hotels in and around International Drive. Heiser has gone on to have a long and successful running career. To say he's a durable runner is an understatement, as by his estimation, he's run about 75 marathons. He doesn't know the exact number, which tells you he's run a lot of them. In this story, it's the start of the new millennium, as Heiser is training with another Lato runner, one who is about 4 years older. Here's Heiser talking about preparation for the Hops Marathon in Tampa.
I actually was training with Mark Altomare. He and I were both trying to get qualified for Boston. He and I ran the first one to get the inaugural Hops Marathon. Neither one of us qualified. We decided, well, we're going to go ahead and try to run again in 2001 so we could qualify to go to Boston. And I don't know whether you know, Mark was like, he was my guy that just took me under his wing. Mark had already graduated when I was in high school, but he was coming back all the time and he was like my big brother. But Mark was a phenomenal pace guy. I mean, he could give you pace right on track. And this, of course, was before GPS and all that stuff. And we'd go through mile splits on our training runs and we'd be right on. Mark was phenomenal when it came to that. Well, we were doing this long workout on Gandy Bridge and trying to get some hills in so we could get ready for Boston, get ready for the Hops Marathon coming up. And we were going towards the Pinellas side, and he blew out his Achilles. I mean, I heard it pop. That's how bad it was. So needless to say, Mark was not able to run the marathon for 2001 for Hops. So, but you know what? He was out there cheering me on, and I did qualify that year. This was way back when you could qualify, and then within, I ran 2002. So Hops was in December. I said, well, shoot, I got a qualifying time, so I'm going to go ahead and sign up for Boston. And I was able to sign up in January. So it was nothing like it is today where, you know, everybody's trying to, you know, get online, you know, that week in September or whatever. And then hopefully you have a good enough time and you've made time crunch, you know?
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I had noticed that in John Brennan's timeline. I was like, this doesn't make sense. But he's like,
right.
It was the first Disney Marathon. I looked it up, and the first Disney Marathon was the same year he ran Boston.
Yep.
I was like, that doesn't make sense. But then I looked in some other newspaper articles and found. And so he basically ran a time in January and ran the race in April. So you did December. Yep. And ran the race in April, right?
I did.
Wow.
I did. I ran it in December and then I ran it in April. And, you know, one of the things that was kind of stood out for me at that first marathon, that first Boston, my birthday is right in the middle of April. And sometimes Boston falls on my birthday. Well, it just so happened that in 2002, it did fall on my birthday. I had to run 3:10 that year to qualify for Boston. I ran 3:12 at Hops. But you know what the deal was? Because my birthday,
age on race day,
I made it because I got an extra 5 minutes, because that's the year that I jumped up to the next level, if you can believe that.
I can. I can't believe how fortunate you were that was the year that it worked. But
I know.
But yeah, And so just, is that like going to like the 35, 39 age group from 34?
Yes.
Is that...
Yes, sir. That's exactly what it was. You know, and that was back in the day when if you ran 3:15 and 59 seconds, you still qualified. You know, it still gave you that 59 seconds. As long as the minute was still 3:15, then you still qualified. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, they were still starting at 12 o'clock in the middle of the day, that type of thing. You know, a lot of things have changed over the time.
Now, this next segment focuses on the Boston Marathon in the year that so many people would like to forget, but just can't. That year was 2013, with near-perfect running weather and a great day for Heiser. It was again his birthday, but there will be no real celebrating that day for anyone. It was the year of the bombing near the finish line, the terrorist bombing that killed 3 people and injured hundreds more. I know it was several years before you went again. I also know that you were there in 2013.
I was. In fact, that was the next year I went, was 2013.
I mean, I can't even imagine. I had friends running it. I was tracking it. I was watching it on TV, but you were there.
Yeah.
What do you remember?
I was mid-40s at that point, and I was running pretty good at the time. So there's a gentleman that was doing a race in Rhode Island at the Narragansett Marathon, which is the same weekend as Boston. His qualifying standards were actually harder than the Boston. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to run this one. That one is on Saturday. I was in pretty good a shape. My intention was to run under 3 hours at the Narragansett Marathon. So I got up there on Friday night and I ran the Narragansett on Saturday morning. And I was running pretty good. I got to about 19, 20 miles, and then things kind of started falling apart. So I chose to kind of back it down at that point. And I ended up running in the 3:10 or 3:12 range. So I didn't run what I wanted to run. But I also knew that I was going to get a rest day on Sunday, and then I was going to come back and run Boston, you know, on Monday. So
you make that sound like it's so much recovery.
So I decided to go ahead and take a rest day on Sunday, didn't do anything. And my intention was I'm just going to go and run Boston at a leisurely pace, you know, enjoy Boston, enjoy everything about it, take in the whole scene and everything else. I have family in Boston, in the Boston area. So I stayed way outside in Riverside. So I was not in the city. I was actually closer to the end of the red line so I could be close to my family. Because it just so happens that in 2013, the Boston was on my birthday again, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, right. And those are your two times going?
Yeah, so those are my two times going on my birthday. So I had to take the train into Boston to catch the bus to go out to Hopkinton. So I went ahead and did that, and I went out to Hopkinton, and it was the most beautiful day in Boston that year. It was probably in the mid 40s, maybe even 42, like in that. I mean, it was perfect. Sun was out, clouds. You know, there was very few clouds in the sky. Blue sky, and I was in like corral 5, I think, or maybe 6. So I was up there a ways, but I had planned on just going out and just backing it down and just enjoying it. Well, I got out onto the course and I really started feeling good, you know. And I said, well, you know, my legs are a little tired, but I think I can run a pretty good time today. Just something that's going to be decent, you know. I went through the half marathon point, got into Heartbreak Hill part of the race, got through that, and then just started meandering on through to get down to the finish line. And I came through the finish line in like, I think it was like 3:15 or something like that. So it was a really good race for me. You know, I mean, I had a good time. I enjoyed everything. It was one of those days, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, or what your training has been. if you have that day when the heavens open up and everything is in perfect sync. That was my Boston Marathon for that year. So I came across the finish line, and just so happened that I had a friend, and this was going to be their very first Boston Marathon. They had qualified, and this was going to be their very first Boston Marathon. So I said, well, you know what? I'll be there at the finish. I'm going to watch you finish. You know, I guarantee you're going to have a great race. So I got through my finish point. They started like in, I think maybe the third wave. So they were a little further back when they started. I got through my finish point, and at that point I was like, man, I am just dead. I mean, I'm spent. It had been a long weekend. I'd done my race on Saturday, and then I did Boston on Monday. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to go back to my hotel room, and they'll understand. I mean, I know they'll understand. What's interesting is that in 2002, when I finished, I had decided I was going to go and watch some of the race, you know, after I got done. And I stood right next to that mailbox where that young man, that young boy was killed. And that's what my plan was to do in 2013. But because I had run on Saturday and then come back and run a decent marathon on Monday, I decided to go back to my hotel room. So I got on the train and I went back to Riverside. By the time I got back, there was stuff on the television. Everything was happening. I was like, what happened? He said there was some sort of explosion at the finish line at the race. I was going, you know, I'm thinking to myself, it's gas pipe or, you know, an electrical explosion, something to that effect. The person that I was waiting, or that I was going to wait to see finish, when they came on to Hereford and started heading towards home at the last 0.2 mile, as soon as they turned on to Hereford is when the second bomb went off. So if I hadn't run that marathon on Saturday, and if I hadn't felt like, you know what, I'm just done for the rest of the day on Monday, I probably would have been right there at the finish line. So that's, wow. That's my story.
You know, the course and those, you know, that street name, that's a new one to me. Is that the turn before Boylston?
Yeah. Hereford, you do a right on Hereford, left on Boylston.
Okay.
So yeah, that's
and so the, yeah, that 0.2 mile, obviously really close. So you would have been, yeah. That would have been the time you would have been watching.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So definitely, you know, when I tell the story, it's still 10 years later, it still puts the hair on the back of my neck up, you know, to think that that's where I probably would have been.
Right. And it's really sad.
It was, you know.
So you get off a train out in the, like, the western suburbs?
Yes, correct. Yeah,
I don't know the red line.
Yeah, the red line goes out towards Riverside, which is kind of towards the west. And then I have a cousin, and her family live out there in one of the suburbs. And they were like, hey, you know, you're going to be up here. Let's go out to eat. You know, we'll just kind of hang out for your birthday or whatever. And that's really kind of what I was thinking when I finished. You know, I was like, well, you know, I'm going to go and meet with my cousin and her husband. So I'm just going to go back to the hotel room and get cleaned up and just relax for a little bit.
Right. So was it family who told you, or was there a TV at a train station?
No, it was when I got back to the train station and I got off the train, I walked. My hotel was right there. So I walked to the hotel, and when I walked into the lobby, they had everything up on one of the screens, and that's when I was like, what is it? You know, what's going on? And
oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we're not going to end on that. You went back, gosh, probably the next year.
I did. Yep. I went back to the next year, and that was amazing. You know, big Boston Strong all over the place. They had done like a shoe sculpture or something like that. You know, I just remember going back and watching that, you know, and seeing how, you know, resourceful and how resilient you know, runners are. And that's really what it kind of boils down to, is like, you know, so many people can just say, you know what, we're never going to do that again because it's the possibility of what's going to happen. Well, I think runners, like, you know what, every day I go out, there's a possibility that it may be my last time, because you just never can tell, you know. And I think runners in general are just so resilient in that regard, because we as people are, you know, we're always looking for the good. And I think that's what everybody at Boston that year was looking at. They were looking at, you know, the good of, you know, the people that were going out there and running for, in the name of certain people, or just running to say, you know what, we're not going to be afraid. We're going to go ahead and do this.
So I got to ask, did you go stand anywhere near where you would have been standing at that 2013 finish line?
Yes, I did. I did. I walked over to the mailbox where I would have been, and I stayed right there. I mean, I just, you know, it, you can't not do it, because it's just something that you have to just have it as a reminder of how lucky you are, you know, every day.
I said it earlier. Heiser estimates he's run 75 marathons. For a while, he was trying to run one in every state. He's been to Hawaii for a marathon. He's been to Big Sur in California and elsewhere. But he keeps coming back to Boston.
I think the first time you do it, it's because you know, you've qualified, and it's just going to be one of those deals where, you know, I've got to do the granddaddy. I got to do the one that everybody strives to get to. I think the reason why so many runners go back is because it's almost like a magic in Boston. The town is a phenomenal town to be in. It's so open to people that are running the marathon. You know, sometimes you go into towns and they're a little upset that you're there, because you're going to stop traffic, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. You know, Boston, they actually have, you know, Patriots Day. I mean, that's the whole premise behind why they do Boston on that day. And so it's almost like a carnival. It's, you know, when John talked about getting a beer, that's not uncommon. I mean, there are people stopping and getting beers. There's, you know, people stopping at, you know, at the half marathon point and getting a kiss from, you know, somebody at Wellesley, you know, I mean, right. That I think is what the lure is to going back year after year after year. If you can get there, is because there's always something new to do.
What would you give as advice for someone who is qualified for Boston for the first time?
My biggest advice is don't get wrapped up in the first couple of miles, because you're downhill. That's what gets people, is you get so excited, the adrenaline is pumping, and it's easy to start. You know, you're supposed to run 7:30 and you've run 6:30. That's the biggest thing. And honestly, I think if I was to tell somebody that's running it for the first time, this is your victory lap. So enjoy it. Just take in the moment. If you start and you plan on running 3:30 and it's not a good day, just enjoy the moment. Just take it all in. There's plenty to see along the way.